The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, gang. By gang, I mean everyone who's listening. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, and I am working with my colleagues. I believe that's Alvin Sadar.
Hello.
Who's the other guy with the 80s background?
Hey, it's me, Chris Himes. I'm still trapped in Tron's little machine here.
You're stuck in the 80s, man.
Yeah.
All right, we got a lot to talk about. We got news. We're going to talk about Mike Lindell last night on Jimmy Kimmel. We're going to talk about Vice President Biden, who's the chief skunk among many. We're going to talk about Vice President Biden and his he gave a speech last night to a group of socially distanced, masked individuals, some of whom were properly elected. And Mike Lindell was on Jimmy Kimmel last night. What should we talk about first? How about Mike Lindell?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Mike Lindell. And let's use the code ERIC when we talk about Mike Lindell.
Yeah, let's use the code ERIC. Now, you can see if you're watching me on video that I'm in a safe space. I'm in a safe house someplace. Actually, I'm in Cookeville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Cookeville, Tennessee. Where's Cookeville? It's about an hour and a half from the Nashville airport. It's about an hour and a half, I think, from Knoxville. So it's kind of the middle of nowhere. It's a charming little town. And I'm speaking today and tonight here in Cookeville, Tennessee. If you're within driving distance, I'm speaking at a big church tonight, and you can come. It's Thursday, the 29th of April. So if you can come to Cookeville, I'm going to be talking about my book, Fish Out of Water. I'm going to be signing copies of the book when it's over. We're going to have fun. We always have fun. I'm really looking forward to this tonight. Cookeville, Tennessee. I'm talking about Fish Out of Water. I'm talking about everything. I'm doing Q&A, I think, and whatever, and doing a book signing. But I'm in Cookeville. Tomorrow, I go to Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Now, yay.
You guys know what I'm doing in Lancaster? This is actually
Are you going to be in one of those Sight and Sound plays?
I might go to see their production of Esther on Saturday. This is true. I'm trying to work this out. It's a big deal. But the reason I'm in Lancaster is because on Saturday night, everyone can watch this. You can go online, type in Metaxas Kahn, C-A-H-N. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn and I are having, it's kind of like a Socrates in the City, you know, interview thing on a stage. Jonathan Kahn, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, wrote The Harbinger and all of those books. And I'm going to be talking to him about what he sees for the future of this country and the world based on these biblical paradigms that he's written about.
Wow.
I got to be honest with you. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Day Spring Christian Academy, right?
That's right. Yeah. We had what the title is.
He's the president, right?
The president of Dayspring, yeah, that's right. His name is Mike Meyer, not to be confused with
Halloween. Yeah,
no,
the Austin Powers. Yeah,
I'm thinking Austin Powers. Yeah, but anyway, that's Saturday night. All right, but we got to talk about Mike Lindell. Last night, I stayed up to watch Jimmy Kimmel. I never watch those shows; it's unbearable. But I stayed up to watch Jimmy Kimmel, and I want to say, first of all, kudos to Jimmy Kimmel and his producers for being willing to reach out to Mike Lindell. They obviously totally disagree with him. They think he's half nuts. But by having him on, they humanized him, which is very tough to do with Mike Lindell. No, Mike Lindell is a friend, so I know him. And the fact that they were willing to have him on, it really did humanize him, because it's easy to make fun of somebody from a distance. But when you have them up close, it's a little harder. You see them for who they are as a human being. And it's a wonderful thing. And I think Jimmy Kimmel took a lot of guff for being willing to have him on. People said he shouldn't have him on. And of course, plenty of people said to Mike Lindell, don't go on Jimmy Kimmel. I was not one of them. I said, you must go on. You should go on. It will be good for everybody. And it was. It was absolutely wonderful. And Mike is, he's just entertaining because you don't know what you're going to get from second to second. He's utterly spontaneous. And did you guys see any of it? I don't know if it was posted online.
Oh, no. I watched the whole thing. Now, I watched it this morning. I didn't. Now, you're an hour behind, so you could watch it and you could get to bed at a proper time. But it was on too late for my wife and I to watch. But yeah, I watched the whole thing, and I think you are absolutely right. I was expecting, oh, there's going to be a real pillow fight, but it wasn't. It was very cordial and congenial and all that. And the audience as well seemed to really get into the conversation and let them speak. I thought there might have been a danger, though, in the way Jimmy brought him on, and the first thing he said, now you have death threats against you. You're afraid someone's going to try to get you, Mike. And yeah, he kept saying, Mike, I read your book, and it seems like you're self-destructive because you lost a bar, you lost all these different businesses. And now are you trying to lose this company by getting into something? I think you might be a little paranoid. And he was sincere. And I thought, sincerity might be the wrong thing here, because it might make people think like, yeah, Lindell's a nice guy, but he's sincerely wrong. And Jimmy's trying to show that.
No. But listen, this is why I appreciate it, because Jimmy Kimmel was totally honest. I mean, he didn't say anything.
Well, that's true.
I mean, he was being real. Right. And I think it's okay. But look, a lot of people are thinking that about Mike Lindell. And the fact of the matter is, it's not a crazy thought. Mike Lindell has had a crazy history. What Jimmy Kimmel doesn't understand, and a lot of people don't understand, is that I might sneeze now.
Okay. Well, why don't you sneeze off camera?
What Jimmy Kimmel doesn't get, what a lot of people don't get, is that Mike Lindell was born again. He had a Jesus experience. So, in other words, he's still Mike Lindell, but he's different. He was delivered miraculously of his addictions. Think about that. The guy was addicted to coke, to crack. And he has an addictive personality, and he seems crazy. But when you get to know him, you realize he's not. And then you realize that God did an intervention in his life. So he's different. You can say that he lost this and he lost that. But what you don't see, what Jimmy Kimmel, I assume, does not see, is that the difference is that Mike Lindell has had a profound experience with God. That's real. People who haven't experienced it, I think, don't understand it, or they think that it's an exaggeration. But there are people who have the kinds of experiences with God that it really changes them utterly. Not in every way, but in the way that it changes them, I mean, it's an utter change. It's not that every part of you is changed, but the part of you is changed is profoundly changed. It's not incremental. Some people, Jesus comes into your life and you're not delivered of an addiction or of a desire, but some people have those desires and those addictions miraculously taken away. It's a miracle. There's no other way to explain it. But I know people who have experienced that. They tell you that, you know, on this day, I never, ever again. And that can happen. It doesn't always happen, but people need to know that it can happen. And in Mike's case, it did happen.
Right. Well, but it seemed like Jimmy was playing off of that by saying like, well, now why would only you get this revelation that the,
of course,
that the
election is stolen? Albin, that's logical. I don't know if Chris has any thoughts on this, but I just want to say, I understand how the other side thinks. I understand exactly what Jimmy Kimmel is saying, and I agree with him, except that he's wrong. In other words, I don't say that what Jimmy's saying is wrong to think. I just think that ultimately he's mistaken, but I understand why he thinks that. It's not illogical for him to think that. We're gonna have to carry this into hour two. Let me just say, in this hour, we got a great guest, Steve Dace. It's pronounced Dace, as I learned in the interview. Steve Dace is, by the way, is that a bong behind me? What is that? I'm in a hotel room. There's all kinds of junk here. Steve Dace, in hour two, we're talking about the lunacy of the woke. The woke Marxist left has infiltrated private schools, elite private schools in Manhattan. We're going to talk about that with Scott Johnson in hour two. But we're going to come back at the beginning of hour two to continue this conversation, because I want to talk about what Biden said last night. He said that the worst thing that's happened to us since our civil war, the worst attack on democracy, was what happened on January 6th. I, and I'll explain this in a bit, I believe that what happened when our election was stolen,
right,
which I'm now convinced it was, and I'm never going to stop talking about it, that was the greatest attack on democracy. And we are being gaslighted by jackanapes like Joe Biden,
yes,
and his crew. Anyway, we're going to go to a break. In hour two, Scott Johnson coming up, Steve Dace. Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out. Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I've found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Folks, welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm playing the role of Eric Metaxas. Hope you don't mind. I'm getting better at it. I have a guest. Stephen Dace. Stephen, is that how we pronounce your name? Or is it just Steve?
It's Steve, but I mean, I think it's actually pronounced Dace, but half of this...
Seriously, you do pronounce it Dace. No joke.
I do, but half the family pronounces it D, so I could be wrong.
I was just going to say, what do you know? You're pretty new to the family.
Yes.
Okay, Steve Dace, but it looks like Dace. I just want to be clear, because if people read it, it looks like Dace, but it's pronounced Dace. Steve Dace. Now, you have a book out. Now, first of all, you got a show on The Blaze. Tell us about your show before we talk about your new book, Faustian Bargain. Tell us about your show.
Well, I'm noon to 2 Eastern on Blaze TV radio. There's a podcast version if people want to just go over to iTunes or Stitcher or Amazon, Spotify, and subscribe to it. Just look for my name. But I get to do the show on Blaze TV right after Glenn Beck, which is a little bit like when you and I were kids debuting a new comedy after Seinfeld or Cheers. You were guaranteed an audience. All right.
Yeah. Here's the problem. I'm a little older than you, so I was not a kid when Seinfeld and Cheers were on. I was kind of one of the people that thought maybe I would write for them. In fact, I almost did write for Seinfeld. But yeah, I was friends with Larry David before anybody knew his name, and he thought I was a brilliant comedian. And then I had this born again experience, kind of burned some bridges, I think, with some people, because they immediately realized, oh, you're a violent insurrectionist, and they can't really be friends with you anymore. But
your words are violence now. Yes.
I'm committing a violence. So you have written a book, wonderful title, Faustian Bargain. Obviously, a joke on the name. Dr. Fauci. What is your principal thesis in the book? And I mean, a Faustian bargain, obviously. Well, tell us what that means, and then tell us about the book.
It's essentially the idea of making a deal with the devil. essentially making a, grabbing a monkey's paw. It's a literary reference. The idea that when you make a deal that sounds too good to be true, in the end, it usually is. As you find out in The Devil and Daniel Webster, for example. And what we've done here is we've created the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history. And your next question probably is going to be, that's quite a statement. Prove that. Well, I will. Think about the fact everybody listening or watching right now, every single person. All right, Eric, everybody. And it's your life, whether you can go outside and breathe free air, whether you can go to church, whether you can go to a store, whether you can go to a movie, whether you can open your business, whether your kids are in school. There is no one in the sound of our voices right now whose lives have not been torn asunder and impacted by edicts of and the opinions of Anthony Fauci without a single vote being cast, mail in or any other methods. All right. No one voted. No one consented to this. And yet he has been given potentate level power for well over a year from now to rule over us. If that's not the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history, I don't know who is.
I've been doing this program for 6 years. I don't think anyone's ever used the word potentate. Thank you very much. You're going to get a check for $25. when we talk about...
I read too many Left Behind books. Yeah.
When we talk about your book, which is Faustian Bargain, the literary reference, of course, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Goethe wrote a book called... I mean, he wrote an epic poem, a play called Faust. And it is Faust makes a deal with the devil... never really goes very well. You're quite right about that. My question is, Trump, of whom I am inordinately fond, he allowed Fauci to get this, to have this pulpit, so to speak. How did that happen? What happened that Fauci, who is Fauci, that he was somehow allowed to get where he is?
You know, we really tried to find the answer to that in the book. And the cover shot, we think, speaks kind of volumes, where in the cover, you see the president essentially exiting stage left while Fauci remains in the White House. And that's essentially what happened in this country. About this time last year, we went through a period for nearly 4 months where Anthony Fauci was essentially, I'll use the word again, the potentate of America. He was the supreme leader of the United States. And, you know, one of the chapters in the book, we have a composite character. We figured if, you know, the other side can write books and do this to us all the time, we're going to finally do it, return fire. There's a composite character named Veritas in the book that's a compilation of several sources and interviews that we did with various people to try to get them to tell us that we're involved either in the White House or knew intimately what was going on there, to try to get the answer to how did this occur. And I think it just is... in the end, you know, Occam's razor still applies, Eric. I think what happened is they panicked. They were met with an incredible amount of media pressure. And then this is the president is a germaphobe. It's his native New York, where you, of course, are very fond, where this is getting just this is the epicenter. It's getting hammered. Probably people, neighborhoods, hospitals. He knows. Dr. Fauci was a well-known celebrity in New York from his work with AIDS. He had been a star on the banquet circuit for years. He's connected to pop culture, Hollywood, high-ranking people. That's why I don't believe, and we can get into this later, I don't believe whatever this last year he's done has been driven by ego. His ego has been quite satiated, thank you very much. He's one of the longest-serving bureaucrats ever. He's the highest-paid bureaucrat ever in American history. He's a much-in-demand speaker, thinker, pontificator. I don't believe that's what led to what we've seen over the last year at all. And I think it probably ran in very similar New York socialite circles. They come to him. The vice president says, hey, this is our number one expert. It's my committee. I'm putting him on. And I think that they thought they were creating something that would present a softer side of Sears to the other half of the country that believed in Orange Man bad. And instead, what ended up happening is they gave a platform to an idol. They essentially created a figure of papal level of infallibility that could not be questioned. And seemingly the more duplicitous and double-minded and the less evidence he offered for his conclusions, seemingly the more power he was given, which is typically what happens with idols. The more they see, the more it's exposed that they're idols and don't work, the more people are bound and determined to put their faith into them.
Well, he really, if I have to say, because I've never followed any of this too closely for my mental health, but it just seems like he never said anything significant or interesting. It was just, it's the classic case of blather. Mm-hmm. He kind of mouthed stuff, general stuff, but it was never any clear, sharp anything. Or if it was clear and sharp, it was wrong. Am I perceiving him correctly? That's roughly what I got.
You're right. From March 11th on, one of the things we point out in our book is prior to March 11th, Anthony Fauci's not stupid. He's brilliant. Everything he said about this virus, when he was basically saying, hey, there's a moderate level of risk here. We got to take some precautions, but it's not the end of the world. He wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine on February 28th of last year. That's maybe our most esteemed medical journal. He basically nailed the fatality ratios for COVID when he compared it to a pandemic level of flu. Here we sit a year plus later, and we have a 1.7 case fatality rate for COVID. When you look at the amount of infections, which are much greater than cases, according to CDC, 8 times more infections than cases. The IFR is really somewhere in the 0.2, 0.3 range, which is higher than a 0.1 for a flu, but nothing that we would have shut a country down for. When he went on 60 Minutes on March 8th and said, there's no point to wearing masks, and kind of was cynical and snarky about them. They don't work. There's no real-time data anywhere in the world that they work. I'll argue with anybody. I don't care how many abbreviations they have after their name. This is complete idolatry, flat earth, junk science. One of the worst flip-floppers on this is actually Biden's Robin to Anthony Fauci's Batman, Michael Osterholm. We can get into that too if you want. He was right about dissing masks. And that's why you haven't worn masks every flu season of your entire life. When he talked about the fact that airborne contagions are not, or when he talked about the fact that respiratory contagions are not spread by asymptomatic carriers, that he said this in January. He's right about that. Now, our CDC estimates it's about 15%, even though we've had studies here, like at the University of Florida, that have found that the percentage is actually like 3. But around the world, the estimate is 3 to 8%. Of infections are asymptomatic. The reason that's important, Eric, is because asymptomatic spread was the genesis story we were given for why we do all of this, that you and I were going to be healthy, go to an event, get it, come home, kill grandma. That's why we had to do this. We were the one dead and just didn't even know it.
Right.
It turns out that that's the biggest lie of this entire thing. He was right when he said that's not a major concern about respiratory viruses. Why? Because they're spread airborne. That's why.
I got to tell you, just so you understand, I'm in Manhattan. As I'm talking to you, I'm looking out my window. I see a pizza delivery guy on a bike, riding his bike with the pizza, wearing a mask. I look outside again. I see a young woman goes to the school my daughter went to, walking down the street, nobody near her, wearing a mask. It's lunacy, ladies and gentlemen.
It's flat earth.
It is lunacy, and we'll be right back to tell you more with Steve Dace, I believe it is called, mentioned, pronounced. Thank you.
Hey, folks, you certainly heard me talk about MyPillow and how their products have literally changed my life. Now, have you tried the pillow? They don't go flat. You can wash them, dry them as many times as you want, and they maintain their shape. They're made in the USA, and for a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering his premium MyPillows for the lowest price ever. You can get a standard queen premium MyPillow for $29.98. It's originally $69.98. That's a $40 savings. Kings are only $5 more. Remember, all MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener's square, and use promo code Eric. There you'll find not only this amazing offer, but also deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream Bed Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, and MyPillow Towel Sets. Folks, you know I use these products, and they're fantastic. Call 800-978-3057 and use promo code Eric, or call 800-978-3057. Use the promo code Eric.
Folks, I'm talking to Steve Dace, D-E-A-C-E, Dace. I don't get it. Hey, Steve,
Your book is called Faustian Bargain. Very clever. Or is it Faustian Bargain? Faustian Bargain. We're talking about the madness that has descended on America as a result of this guy, Dr. Fauci, being given kind of a bully pulpit, kind of a role that never made any sense to me. I don't know how he got there. What do you suppose is fueling him? If it's not his ego, who is he working for?
See, I think, and we make this point from the very beginning of the introduction of the book, we go back to Eisenhower's farewell address, and it's been cited several times for his references to the military-industrial complex, for example. But there's another section in there, Eric, where he warns the country at the dawn of an age of technological marvels to enjoy the blessings of that era and the advancements that will accrue. But don't then create essentially an expert class of oligarchs that become then infallible and you cede your authority over to them. That's what we've done here. And I think it's important to understand that if Anthony Fauci, who's 80 years old, if he had retired at 75, 70, like most Americans do, particularly ones that have a nice pension awaiting them, as he does, if he would have retired, nothing would have changed, I don't believe. Just the personality would have. Another creature would have emerged from the Black Lagoon. This is the system of the bureaucratic state. He is, to borrow a pun, legion. It's not that he is some anti-Christical character. It wasn't Nikolai Carpathia waiting in the shadows and sinisterly manipulated these events and said, aha, now I launch my global community. That's not what occurred here. This is how the Leviathan of Washington, D.C. and the federal government operates. He's a construct. He's not. We made him the singular villain because he's become the singular face. And you know this from being involved in politics. Ultimately, if people don't have a villain, they can't successfully rally against something. But the reality is, if it wasn't him, if, you know, he would have not exceeded the average American lifespan for a white male, which is 78. If he would have retired 5-10 years ago, it might have been Debbie Bedazzle Your Face Shield Burks. It might have been Francis Collins. Who knows who it might have been? But it would have been, I assure you, someone else. And we would have had all these exact same arguments. They just would have had different flair based on the persona.
It's interesting. Do you think that why do you suppose Trump did not dismantle this bureaucratic swamp? In other words, he seems to have been aware of it. Maybe he thought he'd get a second term. What do you think? Why did he fail to do that, to strike the axe at the root?
I think that's one of the great mysteries of his presidency. Did he feel as if he could art it a deal, that swamp, that now that he had the power and the leverage, he could bend it to his will and get it to do what he wanted to do? Is it too much to ask someone to do that, to undo decades of that level of administrative red tape and bureaucracy in one term, particularly when they're constantly under assault with discredited scandals, Russian collusion or the Kavanaugh rape hoax? There's probably a mix. Was he just gutless? I mean, there's several different explanations. There may be a level of truth to all of them. I think what happened in this particular case, I think we have to take this particular case, though, and frustrations we had with not rolling back the swamp in other areas, I think we need to give this one its own outlier case because of perceived threat level that was at the core. And we have to study it, I think, as its own entity and not in the context of why is Julie Swetnick not in a jail cell? Why is William Brennan not in a jail cell, right? These are questions a lot of people that listen to shows like you and I have. But I think this is separate because of the public health perspective. And I think this is another key for your audience. Last week, Anthony Fauci was on TV talking about gun violence as a public health issue. 2 weeks ago, the current head of the CDC was on television talking about insufficient wokeness is now a public health issue. You know, we've had these divisive culture war issues in America for decades, Eric, as you well know. But even amidst them, we have still found time where you could all in New York all go to a Yankee game together. We could go here where I live in the Midwest to a college football game together. We could still set those things aside and enjoy Americana. It didn't threaten to dissolve us at a holistic, fundamental level. Well, that's the spirit of the age isn't like that. And so the spirit of the age has been trying to figure out how can we make this personal to every American so every neighborhood, every cul-de-sac has a Karen. Everywhere, every time you go outside, it's a war. When you look out the window, you literally can almost stereotype people and they're doing the same to you for not wearing a mask, right? The spirit of the age figured out the magic words, the open sesame, to make America's culture war literally a civil war on a civil level, is public health disaster, public health danger, emergency. Do that, and boy howdy, suddenly now all these issues that we debate in social media or philosophically or esoterically or theoretically or morally, those chickens all come home to roost. It's now family members against family members, house against house. Do we even open the schools? Think about the fact the conservatives are now the ones trying to get the kids back into the schools. That's how crazy this has become. All right. And I think audiences like ours need to understand, now that we showed that this is our Achilles heel, this will be the tactic used on every issue going forward. Everything's going to be a public health emergency now.
I think the Chinese Communist Party's willingness to destroy our elections is a health crisis, Steve. I want you to know that. It's a health crisis. I didn't want to go into this, but I'm always curious. I just ask everyone, do you think this election was on the up and up briefly?
No. And I've worked for campaigns. I was a senior strategist for the Cruz campaign. I've done professional public polling. I know how it operates, how it works. I spent a good deal of time here at the Blaze for all of our various shows here, but including for Glenn, breaking down the systemic fallacy of the polling that we saw last year.
Hang on. We're going to go to break. We're going to let you finish that sentence on the other side. Don't go away. An old cowboy. Folks, I'm talking to Steve Dace. Steven, please complete that thought. You are one of those who is convinced that the election was not fair or accurate. Please continue.
Correct. I just do math. Certain things don't add up. There's too many fallacies that are inexplicable. For example, the idea that you could have a Republican presidential candidate have a historic level of non-white votes, the highest by a Republican presidential candidate, I think since Nixon in 1960. And yet you're going to claim that he actually lost the election by 6 million votes. There's only been one candidate in the since post-Reconstruction, when we really began our two-party alignment in America after the Civil War, as we know it today. He's the only candidate that's won Florida and Ohio and not won the presidential election. Look at the amount of bellwether counties that have traditionally determined elections in this country. I think Joe Biden won like less than 10% of them. Now, the argument that you will hear about in return on this is that, well, he was uniquely unpopular, right? So he was uniquely unpopular while tremendously growing his own base of support. I find asserting those two logicisms at the same time, I find that to be somewhat contradictory. So then they will go to, well, the mail-in voting is what permitted a turnout of aspects of the Democratic base that in the past have been turned away. And I suppose that's true. I look at a state like Wisconsin, for example, and I find it fascinating that pretty much all but one county in Wisconsin understood how to use the U.S. postal system. That we didn't see every county in Wisconsin dropping off bags at 3 a.m. How come every other county in Wisconsin understood that they had to have their ballot postmarked by a certain date in order for it to count on the day of the election? How come it was only just one county? How come in all of these states, it's really fascinating, it's only just a couple of counties where apparently the people are just dumb as a rock, man? I mean, post office, rectum, barely knew them. I don't know what a post office is. Never heard of one. Never. What's that? As Cheech and Chong once said, isn't that it back on the bumper, man? I don't know. Never. I don't. How to, what is it? I don't know what to do. And so it's just amazeballs that in every county that they control the entire political apparatus, those just happen to be the counties where people could not figure out how to adequately and sufficiently mail their ballot in on time so that it would arrive on time and be counted with the rest of the ballots.
Okay, you know, so
if we didn't have Wuhan for luck, we'd have no luck at all, Eric. I tell you.
So here's my question. Are you convinced by what Mike Lindell has put out there with regard to the vote flipping from China principally?
I watched his initial documentary and discussed it on our show on a surface level, because there's a lot of claims that Mike is making there that obviously I have no way of verifying on a third party. So I'm glad that they sued him and that he is suing them back. Because we have a little thing in this in these kinds of lawsuits called discoveries that can be a female dog or a motherless goat if you're caught with your pants down. And what I hope Mike does, now I don't know Mike. I've met him like once in a green room at an event we both spoke at in passing. So I don't know him personally at all. If you do, I would hope that he actually defends himself on the merits of his charges and not strictly on free speech grounds, as Alan Dershowitz hinted at a few weeks ago, meaning that go after them on the merits of your charges. You're saying these things not because you have a right to, you're saying these things because they are true. Mm. That's where your suit now becomes a platform for a Valley of Elah. Let's have a reckoning about this. And what's the if everything was on the up and up, then what is there to hide?
Well, is there anything that he puts out in these documentaries that you say, I don't get that, or that doesn't seem right? In other words, that's what's unclear to me, because I don't know enough to know exactly what I think.
Yeah, there's nothing I don't understand. There's just nothing I can independently verify. And in the world that I operate in, you know, I went out there, man, basically me and a couple of other people against the world at this time last year, going up against the Leviathan of COVID stand. And I learned that the way I survived when everybody's getting banished and banned constantly for daring to defy, and you see this when you read Fauci and Bargan, I didn't show up in the Valley of Elah with only 5 smooth stones, Eric. I brought receipts, all right? I mean, I got footnotes, citations, references. There are more footnotes in this book than actual pages, all right? I bring receipts. So, you know, show me where I'm wrong. This is how I've vetted candidates in the past, which is how I irritate people. I bring receipts. All right. Show me if there's something that's factually inaccurate, by all means, then let's deal with it. And I'll correct it if you can show me that I'm wrong. Other than that, your blustering means nothing to me. And so for me to be successful pushing back in this era, I have to, pardon the pun, I've said that a few times, walk a very narrow road. What can I independently verify myself? If I try to do this through other parties, then I assume their risk and responsibility.
Got it.
There's nothing in his claims I don't understand. There's just nothing that I can independently verify.
Got it.
I was ecstatic to see him sue them back.
So you nonetheless have concluded that Biden was not elected.
I don't believe that Joe Biden was lawfully elected. And I think 72 Democrat lawyers being sent to Maricopa County, Arizona this week to stop a forensic audit of that election offers at least some anecdotal confirmation that they're not entirely confident in what a forensic audit would entail. You know,
go ahead.
We kept being told that the mail-in ballots in Georgia by the Republican Secretary of State there were all on the up and up. And yet, funny thing is, after they lost those 2 Senate seats, all of a sudden, the Republican power structure in Georgia decided, you know, we really, by golly, we got to clean up these mail-in ballots and make sure we can verify all. We got to make sure we can now verify all the signatures. Eric, what were they auditing in Georgia? If just now is the law that they have signature audits applied to mail-in ballots, what in the Sam Hill were they auditing before then? If that wasn't the law before, right? So, I mean, just look at the actions. Look at what's happened with January 6th. That entire narrative is falling apart. Everything's falling apart. The Sicknick family has still not been told the cause of death of their son.
Hey, can you imagine? We're going to go to another break, but we'll keep you around. Steve, great to have you, folks. The book is Faucian Bargain. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk.
Folks, I'm talking to Steve Dace, D-E-A-C-E. The book is Faucian Bargain. Okay, so Steve, I just want to say this again. You're one of the people that is convinced that Biden was not elected. How do we deal with that? Because I too am convinced, and I ask people who know way more about this kind of thing than I do. You're one of those people. How can we possibly go forward as a nation when we're not addressing that?
It's not the voter fraud that's the issue. It's the lack of addressing it. We've had voter fraud in the past. One of the most famous elections in American history, people think, was decided by voter fraud in 1960, for example. It's the Las Vegas shooter. It's the Nation of Islam police killer. It's that if something doesn't fit a certain narrative, the truth gets chloroformed, Eric. It can't be discussed. It can't be debated. 3 weeks ago, Eric, if you and I had done our shows and recommended to our audience they not get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because we're getting emails from listeners about blood clotting or females that are postmenopausal or saying, hey, I just had a menstrual cycle, something ain't right about this, we'd have been banned off of every social media platform. Then when the government says, hey, we're going to hit a pause button on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, suddenly it's okay for us to talk about it. You know, that seems like kind of the inverse of how free speech and the First Amendment works in America, where our rights come from God and not from government. That government's job is to protect our God-given rights, not tell us and quantify us for us what rights that we have. And this actually, what happened in this election goes right back to Fauci and Bargain, because we have fought left the Democrats on mail-in voting. I mean, I've been in this business for 15 years. We've been fighting him as long as I've been in this business. And as long as I can remember, in the 90s, we fought him on motor voter stuff and other things of that nature when I was just an activist, because we feared this sort of realpolitik. This would not have happened without the lockdowns and handing the country over to Fauci. That set the stage for them to implement the very mail-in voting paradigm, I would call scheme, that they have tried to usher in for decades. This set the stage for it. This would not have happened. In multiple ways, Donald Trump would have been reelected if not for COVID lockdowns. Number one, it crushed his own economy. And number two, it handed his opposition the very paradigm and instrument that was needed in order to defeat him.
It's just extraordinary. So you're telling me, having been in the business, so to speak, of politics, that the Democrats have long wanted to implement the mail-in ballots to commit voter fraud.
Yes. It's what we would say to commit voter fraud. They would say it is to identify underprivileged aspects of their base who apparently don't know how to get a photo ID, don't know how to get up and walk to a polling place, don't know what day.
Well, look, we know they would say that publicly, but you're telling me privately they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't believe that this is just innocence. I believe it's malevolence. Yes.
Do you believe Joe Biden knows he was not elected?
No, I don't. I think, and I've been saying this since early in the Democratic primary process, all the signs of dementia and those sorts of things are there. We've only got
50 seconds left. Do you think that if he is not actually running the country and is not actually behaving as president, that we have a constitutional crisis? Aren't we supposed to deal with that if we have somebody who's incompetent?
Yes. But again, we're like, Constitution, what is it? It's the Constitution is like the book of Deuteronomy when Hilkiah the priest found it in the temple that day. Hey, what is this thing? We don't know what it is. That's what the Constitution is in our culture today. Unfortunately, it's a dead letter to our government.
It's a joy speaking with you, Steve Dace. We will have you back because there's a lot more to talk about. The book is Faucian Bargain, loaded with footnotes, folks. This is the real stuff. Steve, thank you for your time. Thank you for your voice in the culture. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you, Eric. Take care. God bless.